Being a peacekeeper has always been about devoting a period of time of one's life to the noble ideals of peace and security. But it has taken a very specific dimension in recent years in view of the very difficult situations in which we are requested to step in. And indeed, when we see the situation we face in northern Mali, where we are deliberately targeted by jihadists, by international drug traffickers, or traffickers in guns or human beings, and that is extolling a very heavy price. Only a few days ago, we had once again five peacekeepers who were killed in a deliberate ambush.
The theme for this year is honoring our heroes. What about the heroines? How has the role of women in the field evolved over the year, and what are the challenges they continue to face?
Since the Security Council Resolution 1325 on women, peace and security was adopted, I think it has become accepted by all that there is a direct connection between women, peace and security, that they have a role to play, that we need to make the space necessary, in particular to have women amongst our uniformed personnel. We cannot, of course, do much better than the armies of the world, where, as you know, the sociology is such that there are not all that many in most countries. But we are doing rather better in the field of police. We have between 11 and 12% of women in UN police. And even we have created a number of all-female police units, you know, to take care of the specific situation of women in countries like DRC, Liberia, or Haiti. And I think the results are totally convincing.
It's difficult to speak about the blue helmets, about peacekeepers today, without thinking about the terrible accusations of sexual misconduct. These accusations are, of course, terrible. The impact is terrible for the direct victims. But how does it also affect the morale of the other troops and the relationship between contingents and the communities that they're supposed to work with?
It is true that such acts are absolutely ignoble. They are unacceptable. It's not only about zero tolerance. The goal has to be zero occurrence. So there's a lot to do about prevention, but there's a lot to do also in follow-up to these allegations, because, as you said, the totally unacceptable behavior of few contaminates the image and the courage and the great contribution of the vast, vast majority of their colleagues. At the same time, of course, it's also true to say that the countries that contribute, the troops and the police, have never accepted to give to the United Nations the power to investigate or to prosecute. But this, I think, now is a bit overtaken by events, because we have a policy of naming the countries that are cited in these allegations. To name them, I'm not thinking of naming and shaming, just naming. And naming when, and that happens, fortunately, when a country, in the face of such allegations, reacts in the rapid and transparent way that is required. What is important is that there is a very quick follow-up to these allegations, and that when the fact is established, there is effectively prosecution and penalty being awarded. One of the solutions that I would favor, despite a number of legal difficulties, would be that the troop contributing country accepts to organize a court-martial in the very country where the acts have occurred. Another very important task for us, of course, is to do everything we can to support and help the victims. Once the case is established in every way,
are you able to approach the subject more freely, more openly, more easily with the concerned countries?
Well, the concerned countries, they are usually quite discreet about it, you know, because these are countries which have experienced a lot of violence, are so often so weak that they don't have a lot of capacity to express themselves on this. But I can understand that they do feel very strongly, and this is why we have to show them that we are very serious about it.